Welcome everyone to the biggest anti-war show streaming on Rumble and YouTube and Twitter. This is Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, and we are vehemently anti-war on this show. And if you watch the mainstream media, they are continuing to push us right towards war and any kind of conflict they can get their hands on, including the story we're going to cover for you in our top A block tonight, which is all about China. And about exactly how this Wuhan lab leak story is being played on the mainstream media by the Biden administration, by the far right. It's kind of crazy, actually, to see them slow pushing us right towards a major conflict with China.
Yes. And not quite so slowly. It seems to be ramping up, and maybe they're screaming from megaphones. Yeah. At this point, you probably have already seen this across your screen, across your headlines. We also are going to talk about the State Department and how they are funding disinformation campaigns that cause advertisers not to work with media outlets that they think are naughty. So the State Department is actively ranking media organizations, who is doing it right and being a good little girl or a good little boy, who's doing it wrong, and trying to make sure that those media outlets that they think are doing it wrong go bankrupt. This is an egregious conflict of interest, not how the government should be using taxpayer dollars. And we're going to explain it to you. It also has a link to the Wuhan lab theory, and we're going to tie it all together with a nice little bow.
Also, we got some leaked messages, some leaked WhatsApp messages showing just exactly what these politicians were planning for lockdowns, and really stunning news out of the UK, but it's all tied together. So all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, everybody. We knew that there were some issues over on the Rumble stream as we were getting started and firing things up here. We were working with the team from Rumble, and they asked us to lower our bit rate a little bit. We were sending our normal signal, but there was an issue, so we lowered it a little bit. So instead of a 4K signal, we lowered it a little bit, so it should now be good, a little bit better over on Rumble. So their team is actively working on it right now. So just be aware that Rumble is aware of it and they are working on it. Everything should be good to go, though, on YouTube and on Twitter. We're streaming on all those platforms. I just wanted to point that out. I should mention, I don't mention this often enough. Actually, I've never mentioned this, but I was in the analytics today for our channel, and it turns out that 40% of you watch the show, but you're not subscribed to the show.
What's wrong with you?
And apparently you watch it regularly, but you're not subscribed. So it would help tremendously if you're thinking about it, but just to go ahead and subscribe to our channel here.
Commit.
I know it's kind of crazy to think about, but
commit to us. It's a free little click of a button.
Right. And then also turn on the little notification button. If you turn on the little notification bell, then when we go live, you should get a notification unless we're being suppressed. So how many of you actually get a notification? Raise your hand. Do you guys turn on the notifications? Let me know if you guys actually do get those notifications. The reason we do that 30-minute countdown timer at the beginning of the show is so that all those notifications can arrive in people's inboxes or notifications or whatever. And then we promptly start at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So anyway, just thought I'd mention it. And if you do subscribe,
go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you do subscribe, your name
say,
will...
You first.
All right. If you do subscribe, your name will pop right up here on the big screen. Okay, now go ahead, Philip.
No, I was just going to say that sometimes I get the notifications that we're days later. Literally days later.
Oh, great. That's great. That's really helpful. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So a lot of people say maybe switch to a 48-hour countdown.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do it 48 hours in advance. It sounds like there's a big delay tonight between us and you today, Philip. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, so internet gods giving us some craziness tonight.
Yeah, this week has been a little tough on us, but we're here. We have news to share. We are watching what you have to say. We appreciate you being here. And we also remind you that the newsletter is another way to get in touch with us. It's at redacted.inc, and it is written as a companion piece to this very show. So a lot of the news that you get here when you come and sit down with us, plus more, it comes Monday through Friday. We produce it in the morning on our time zone. We're in Greenwich Mean time zone. So it should come to you if you're in the U.S. when you wake up, or depending on where you are in the world. Put in your email address, seek out that confirmation email, click it, tell us, and then, yeah, you're committed, right? And then we're emailing each other, and it's wonderful. So it's redacted.inc, and I hope you really enjoy it because we put a lot of work into it.
That's right. All right. Let's get to our top story. Are you aware? I'll just ask you guys this question in the chat. You guys can drop it in here. Are you guys aware when you're being used as a tool of the deep state? Would you say that you're aware now of when you're being used as a tool of like the propagandist deep state now? Do you have enough awareness about yourself now? Maybe like Natalie 10 years ago, different, right? But now do you think, oh, I'm being played here. I am aware that we're being used. Are you aware of it?
I feel like I am always on the lookout for it. Sure.
That's a good status to be in. What about you guys in the chat? Let us know. Are you guys aware when you're being used as a tool of the deep state? Because we are all being played right now like a fiddle around China. We've been telling you for a year that the real story is China. We hope you've been paying attention to that. Russia is, you know, is a distraction, but the real story, of course, is China. How exactly the U.S. was going to try and undermine China wasn't really clear. I think they're pretty stupid. I don't really think they know exactly how they're going to undermine China. Worried about the U.S. hegemony. But it's growing increasingly clear now, like what their strategy is around China. So we do want to issue you a warning tonight on the show. Be very careful with all of this controlled propaganda that they're pushing. It's all over your television set right now. Not on this channel, but it's all over Fox, MSNBC, NBC News. Every major media outlet is falling for it. It's actually kind of crazy. I've been talking to a bunch of journalist friends and they can't believe it either. I mean, they're like, they're like, I'm seeing people on Twitter who I would normally think are sane have like lost their mind.
But it is a part of, I was a researcher on the book Culture of Fear, and it is part of a normal media cycle that we, you know, were able to establish for all manner of things like Halloween candy, shark attacks, you know, pedophile priests. Those things follow a similar pattern of media cycles. And now it's war media cycles, but it's insert country here. So if we were to just replace all of these headlines with Russia and wind the clock back 1 year, it's the same. And I think the reason that China is now being inserted into the headlines is because the media cycle around Russia was starting to break into pieces when people realized how much it was costing in terms of lives, in terms of money, in terms of, you know, livelihood of normal people. And so because that was crumbling, we needed a new country. I don't know where we would go a year from now with another country, but we could just keep recycling them. I mean, Russia's always a good enemy. And I was thinking about this to myself today as we were talking about, you know, how it's just like dog and bone. How the White House is like, now China's the enemy. And the media is like, okay, great. Is that like, what do we personally know about China? What do we know, unless you've been there, unless you've lived there, unless, I mean, we know the Uyghur story was a manipulation. We went over that in detail. I refer you to the piece we did late last summer on the United Nations report. And so, like, unless you really know and you're just spitting out these headlines, then yes, you absolutely are a mouthpiece of the deep state.
Right. And a lot of people should know better. I mean, this is the thing, right? A lot of people should know better on the right right now. I'm not talking about the left, because the left is out to lunch on this, honestly. And we have no dog in this hunt at all. I mean, I think both parties are corrupt. Right. Republicans and Democrats are absolutely corrupt.
And so we're not here speaking for China. We don't know.
No. And
but we also are not going to sit here and be like, yes, China bad. How do you know that? The news says so.
Right. So a lot of people should know better on the right. And they're being used right now as tools of the deep state for a narrative, to push a narrative about COVID and about the Wuhan lab. And it's all a distraction. they want you to fall for this. They really do want you to fall for this story for a very specific reason, which I'm going to get to here in a second. All of the mainstream media, though, if you watched over the past 24 hours, 48 hours, quite honestly, they're all pushing the same story that COVID came out of the Wuhan lab. We know that. I mean, that's nothing new. We all knew that here. You watched the show. You knew that that was the case. But now that's the truth, right? And it's all over the TV. And now they're even getting the FBI and the CIA and all of these heads of these alphabet agencies on television to really tell you that this is what happened. Here's NBC News with the FBI director. Watch.
A blunt new assessment from the head of the FBI about the origins of COVID-19, deepening the debate this morning over what triggered the global pandemic.
The FBI has for quite some time now assessed that the origins of the pandemic are most likely a potential lab incident.
Oh, for some time. Well, now you tell us. Why convenient? We've known for some time. Yeah, and he's like, yeah, we knew this. We all knew this. We know. We've known for some time.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization continues to say, we can't complete our investigation. We really don't know. We're done now.
We're just going to wrap it up. We don't have the patience for it anymore. We just move along, everyone.
Because they maybe don't need it the way that the American political landscape needs it.
So when the FBI is speaking on camera, you know they're trying to get you to believe in something, right? They don't just bring the FBI director out and put him on camera. They want you to believe something. And Fox News, going all in on this story too, in a big way. Watch.
China is not too happy about that whole lab leak thing, the communist nation slamming the FBI and accusing the Bureau of politicizing the deadly virus and wants America to respect science and facts. But that's not going to deter FBI Director Christopher Wray. This is what he said he thinks the Chinese are hiding.
I will just make the observation that the Chinese government seems to me has been doing its best to try to thwart and obfuscate the work here, the work that we're doing, the work that our U.S. government and close foreign partners are doing. And that's unfortunate for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, did you notice that Christopher Wray, that he was not on just NBC? They trotted him out on all the networks. They make him a press opportunity.
He spoke to the Wall Street Journal as well. And this is just on the heels of the Department of Energy report, which we spoke about on Monday, that came out that said that they had low confidence that COVID was leaked from a lab in Wuhan. But the FBI said, hey, we said this a long time ago. We have moderate confidence. Yeah. So we have low and we have moderate. So those are things we go to war over?
Yeah. So both the head of the CIA and the FBI... both doing interviews. Since when does that happen? And talking about China and the China threat. What are they hiding? They're a threat over the past few days. And, you know, they might be, right? We've known all of this, though, for 3 years that the virus came out of a lab in China. We know this. And we already knew that Dr. Fauci was funding it and actively involved in it, even though he denied it. Remember this?
Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress... do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain-of-function.
So what was? Let me finish. You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans.
Right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about quite.
Yeah. And then you remember, short while later, we got this, which is the NIH admitting, of course, that funding risky research virus, the researchers funding virus research in Wuhan was actually what they were doing, gain-of-function research. Exactly. And then they admitted it. So they knew this for 3 years. And now, here's the really interesting part of this. I mean, there's a whole bunch of interesting parts we're going to get to, but I find this one really fascinating. They're going to have to walk like a really delicate fence-walking moment here. Fauci's now out of office, right? He's no longer employed in that way. He's still getting a $300,000 pension per year, $380,000 per year pension from the government. So you're still paying him with your tax money. But how do you do this story without blaming Dr. Fauci, right, from the Biden administration? Like, how do you walk this line without blaming him?
Oh, right? That's a good question.
It's like a real delicate dance they're having to do right now, distracting everyone about it. But everyone on the right, this is stunning. I mean, everyone, like Fox News, and it's just amazing to watch this. I can't really wrap my head around it. I'm trying to. Everyone on the right is falling for this propaganda. Like, see, China killed 6 million people. Like, that's what they're saying. Blaming China for the deaths of millions of people. So watch Fox's Peter Doocy ask Corinne Jean-Pierre why Biden isn't punishing China. Watch.
Thank you, Corinne. Why is President Biden afraid of China?
The president is not afraid of China. Well, did you see the president last week when we went to Ukraine, went to Kyiv? This is not a president that's afraid of anything. It was a historic trip that many of you said was brave. So clearly, this is a president that's not afraid to go to a war zone. He's not afraid to go there when there's no military presence on the ground. So there's nothing that this president fears.
China flew a spy craft over the U.S. The president didn't really do anything to China. And according to the FBI director, China may have created something that has killed more than 1.1 million people in this country. And President Biden is not punishing them.
So, okay. It's very easy. So I love Peter and congrats on his new baby, former colleague of mine. I don't get. So this is the argument now from the right. China killed millions of people. Don't fall for it, because it's very easy to get on TV and in a 2-minute segment to be able to say, yeah, see China, and like Ted Cruz and all these people getting on TV over the past 24 hours, like, yeah, China killed all these millions of people, you know, with the lab leak. They're responsible. We need to hold them responsible. And it's much more difficult, though, to have a nuanced discussion about it and really ask the question, wait a minute, did COVID kill 1 million people, 6 million people? Really? Was it COVID? Or was it, and we now have multiple confirmations of this from doctors we've spoken to on this show, very, very smart doctors who are the tops in their fields in the brain and heart and respiratory, and the list is endless, that PCR tests were a major mess up. And the PCR tests have been a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. And what about death certificates?
Yeah, we have more questions that we're going to get to later in the show about COVID and like the way that we're reporting it, the way we're rewriting history. So to throw around those numbers now and pretend that...
Did they die of it, from it, or...
Or that we know for sure that like what the impact of the pandemic was, or that it was, you know, because it was the governments that made policy that killed people in other ways.
Well, exactly. And that's
so
what I'm getting to.
Are we going to then, you know, hold those governments to account? I mean, we talk many times on this show about how we would like to, sure.
Throwing people together in places in lockdowns where they couldn't leave those places. I mean, the list is endless, right? Doctoring death certificates. We never have death certificates that say died from the flu, right? But now suddenly we have death certificates that died from COVID. So died of, from, and then, oh, it's millions of people and China did it. Okay.
Also, I'm very distracted by that. He went to Kyiv, so he's not afraid of anything.
Right.
Kind of like he is Iron Man.
And by the way, when he went to Kyiv and there was literally, they called the Russians a few days ahead of time. We've got confirmation of this. They told Russia, they told Moscow, Biden's coming to Kyiv. Don't, you know, and
don't
they
pull
had,
any funny
they
business.
Had an agreement back and forth. Yeah, he's fine. Go ahead. And then, so they gets to Kyiv and they play these air raid sirens, which no air raid sirens have gone off in that city in months. But now suddenly there's the president and it's just all for show. Like, because he's walking with Zelensky, they're playing the air raid sirens. Like, he's under attack right now. Look how brave he is.
Fearless.
It's all propaganda. It's all fake. So you're hearing this over and over again over the past few days about this idea that China is responsible for all these deaths. Watch Liz McDonald at Fox. Liz, very smart woman. She starts off by asking the right question of Senator Ted Cruz. Why now? Like, why are we hearing about this now, Senator? Watch.
Look who's here, Senator Ted Cruz, her Senate Foreign Relations. Senator, it's good to have you back on, sir. What's your reaction to this? Why is this coming out now?
Well, listen, this is a bombshell report. You now have two major agencies in the Biden administration who have admitted what I think has been blazingly obvious for over 2 years, which is that the COVID virus escaped from a Chinese government lab, and the millions of deaths are a result of that virus escaping from a Chinese government lab. You now have the Biden Energy Department that has concluded that it is more likely than not that the virus escaped from a Chinese government lab. Not only that, the Biden FBI has likewise concluded that is the most likely source. This is incredibly relevant on a number of fronts. Number one, the media, the corporate media, for 2 years has been lying about this. They have been labeling as misinformation and conspiracy theory the obvious inference, which is that this escaped from a Chinese lab, I think likely the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That every one of the media outlets that echoed those talking points from the Chinese Communist Party, every Democrat politician that echoed those talking points should be held accountable. But secondly, we need real transparency, and the government of China needs to be held accountable for the millions of lives that have been lost because of this virus, for the trillions of dollars of damage in terms of jobs destroyed, businesses destroyed, the world economy brought to its knees because of China's culpability.
Okay. So
I wrecked their country too.
Yeah, and your government policies weren't responsible for this? Like, so what about Sweden? What about other countries that said, well, this is just a what about the, you know, we were talking about the Amish, right? What about African countries who are like, no, we're going to live our lives. I don't know what they're doing. What are these countries doing with this virus? I don't know. We're just going to live our lives, right?
Yeah.
So, no, it wasn't the virus. It was the government response to this thing, right?
Yeah, you make a valid point.
So, you know, and I don't know, it's just interesting. Remember all these people that you want.
What talking points is he saying that Democrats who echoed these talking points should be held accountable? Is he talking about the Democrats who said
that it wasn't from the lab?
That the lab leak was racist.
And it was disinformation.
That's fake news. Should be held accountable.
And they all slammed President Trump for saying it. He called it the China virus, and they said that was racist, and all of these things. Right? The left was like, I can't believe he would say that. You know?
Yeah. So you cannot hold politicians accountable for lying. It is their First Amendment right, and it's sort of exactly there. We've covered a case, I think, in North Carolina where someone tried to do that recently to hold politicians accountable for a political lie. And the judge ruled that you cannot. So they are going to continue to lie. He does not sit there as if he has never told a lie. So, okay, yeah. That's a nice thing to say on Fox News and, like, you know, grandstand.
Right.
But I call him out on that.
So remember, all of these people want you to believe that China is the enemy, right? After the U.S. shipped its entire manufacturing base to China so that we could get cheap televisions in the United States. So we gutted our entire manufacturing to send it to China, right? The U.S. doesn't export anything anymore except Hollywood garbage entertainment. When's the last time that you bought an American-made television, a cell phone, a microwave, like maybe the early 1980s, maybe? Mm. You bought something that was made in the United States like that? And I'm not talking like, you know, a pair of boots or something like that. I'm talking like an actual item that's being used in the home that costs thousands of dollars and is, you know, a big purchase, right? Big manufacturing purchase.
Okay, because I can think of some consumer goods like Doc Bonners or Burt's Bees.
like a Burt's Bees wax chapstick or something like that, right? No, I'm talking about actual, you know, big purchases. Did you know that more than 90 American companies made television sets in the early 1950s, more than 90 American companies were competing in making television sets in the United States. And Zenith was the last one standing. Zenith, in 1995, sold off to Korea, and so ended the last of the American TV manufacturing boom. Gone. And there it was. Last U.S. TV maker will sell control to Koreans. Bye-bye. So we're watching what's being called the start of the fourth industrial revolution, and China is leading it right now by a landslide. This is CNBC. Yesterday, look at this. China's factory activity grows further, marks its highest reading in nearly 11 years. China's exports to the global south are up 2 times in 3 years. 2x.
On coal, they're continuing to build coal plants. That's what a lot of this is running on. And their electric
cars. And they're building nuclear.
Yeah.
They're partnering with Russia on uranium production. So they're actively moving towards nuclear, and they're also still building coal plants. And as David Goldman writes in the Asia Times this morning, China isn't contesting the U.S.-centric order. There's this misconception that, like, China's going directly after the U.S. manufacturing base or going right after. No, it's not, actually. It's literally building another world order of its own that has nothing to do with the United States. Think about this. This is scary for us, and it's threatening to us because we're not doing it. It's like, oh, he's doing it first. Now we've got to find a way to undermine him. So here's exactly what the exports to the global south look like. Look at this chart. Over the past 2 years, in 3 years, actually, look. So this is Turkey, India, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, the Philippines, Brazil, Mexico. All of these exports from China skyrocketing to the global south. We don't send anything there. What are we exporting to the Philippines except for weapons and building military bases there?
TikTok dances.
No, we're not. We're even trying to ban TikTok. Malaysia, Thailand. We're not sending stuff to Thailand and Vietnam. China is. And not only that, they actually are building manufacturing in those countries. Look at this data yesterday. This morning data. America has over 1 million factory jobs that are open and unfulfilled. America has 1 million jobs open in manufacturing that no one wants. So this is all about the value of the U.S. dollar and the military-industrial complex. It's not about COVID at all. While the United States started closing down its factories and sending them to China and Mexico, China did something actually very different. It dramatically expanded its middle class. I mean, it jumped almost by like 40% in just a few short years. Stunning. And it started building or buying factories in Vietnam, Indonesia, and Mexico. So then when these companies are like, you know, we're getting out of China. I'm sick of the Chinese. You know, they're virtue signaling. These companies are like, well, we're done with China then. You know, they're sending balloons to us. So we're going to move our manufacturing to Vietnam. There's a little dirty secret, though, that the plant they're moving to is also owned by China. Just happens to be in Vietnam and Indonesia and the Philippines and Mexico. These are Chinese-owned manufacturing. So they've diversified out of China themselves, where the United States has literally gutted its entire manufacturing base. And now, of course, under this Inflation Reduction Act, which is an inflation-increasing act by the Biden administration, they're trying to bring American, you know, manufacturing back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
What kind?
Right. What is going to come to the United States? It's not going to happen. This idea of reshoring, I guess, is what the term is, right? We're going to reshore our manufacturing in the United States. It's not going to happen. Tesla, as an example, just today announced, right? We had
Mexico.
A newsletter. They're moving to Mexico. They're you know, putting up a new plant and building a new plant. Not here. Not in the United States. Mexico. So when Americans talk about leaving China, going to other countries, it's all smoke and mirrors. They're literally just going to Vietnam, which is owned by China, and all these other places. And what are we doing? We are sending weapons. So this is all about American hegemony and power. And this morning, the U.S. State Department approves potential sale of F-16 munitions to Taiwan, according to the Pentagon, and additional troops going to Taiwan. So we continue the military-industrial complex. They want you to know that there's a threat from China so they can continue to sell weapons and ramp up our military production in those areas and keep the military-industrial complex burning and churning. Mm-hmm. And you know, making as much money as possible. And then Nicholas Burns yesterday, the U.S. ambassador to China, said something pretty stunning that Aaron Mate picked up, and I missed this. It was pretty amazing that basically the United States runs the South China Sea. We basically are in charge of the Indo-Pacific region, the United States. He's like, we are, and we're going to stay there, and they understand that. He says, watch this crazy statement from the U.S. ambassador.
Our American position is stronger than it was 5 or 10 years ago. It's the strength of our alliances. It's the strength of our private sector. It's our innovative capacity and our R&D capacity, which comes from our research institutions and our big tech companies. And I do think that the Chinese now understand that the United States is staying in this region. We're the leader in this region in many ways, and that we want a future of peace with China. We don't want, as President Biden makes clear every time he talks about this, we don't want conflict, but we're going to hold our own out here. And I feel optimistic, I'm just concluding my first year as ambassador, about the American position in this country and in this region.
Yeah, so we run the show in the Indochina region. That'd be like literally China saying, yeah, in the Gulf of Mexico.
We're in charge there.
We're in charge there. We're literally under, like in their belly, we're in charge. Okay. Yeah. That's like,
yeah, and not only that, but that would be like China also then starting to stockpile weapons to Puerto Rico.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, that's with Taiwan. Cause that's, you know, basically it's like, we're like, hey, no, that's our, you can't do that. Cause that's ours. And they're like, nope,
nope, nope. We run it. We run the show. Yeah. We feel really good about that. We run the show. So Martin Zinn on, I like this tweet in response. Martin Zinn says, we don't want conflict, but we supply a province of China with weapons. Conduct provocative drills and flights near your borders. Have our generals and admirals say they are ready to go to war with you. Surround your country with military bases. And this is peaceful?
Right. I actually was watching Garland Nixon, who we had on the show yesterday, and mm-hmm. he posted on Twitter that he says he's watching these videos on Telegram about the bodies stacking up in Bakhmut. And he's thinking, if you're in Taiwan and you can't figure out what Biden and his administration has planned for you, you're seriously naive. Like, this right. is carbon copy. And if people in Taiwan, you know, they would be, it would not be paranoid to think that this will apply to their right. situation.
And even if it's just us stirring the pot in order to undermine China, in order to try to make America's place in the world stronger through the U.S. hegemony, like strengthening the U.S. dollar. But I'm telling the fourth industrial revolution is here, and it's moving directly away from the United States. And this is what they're scared of. So when you see all these people on TV pushing all of this stuff, all of this fear mongering about China and the Wuhan lab and all of this stuff, it's a distraction from what they're really pushing for. And, you know, and of course, how many things can we throw at China right now? Now they want you to ban Chinese made TikTok, because why not? Just add that to the pile of things that they're actively trying to undermine China with. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I don't like TikTok, but I'm just saying this is now what they're throwing at them. Like, this is Jean-Pierre yesterday. Watch.
We've been very clear that TikTok, you know, poses a problem and an issue. And so we have concerns about that as it relates to Americans' data, collecting Americans' data, and the potential national security risk. And we've been very, very clear on that.
We're very clear.
Oh, yes. Have you ever heard of the NSA?
Yeah, right. So the NSA, you know, that Edward Snowden taught us about, right, actively collecting all of our data. And but we're worried about China doing it through TikTok. But we'll do it surreptitiously and lie about it.
It's actually, so in his book, he talks about how he was,
Edward Snowden,
Edward
does.
Snowden was asked to do a presentation on how China collects data on citizens. On its own citizens, I believe, is what the report was on. And as he was doing this, he was like, why is all of this classified information about how China surveys its population in here? Why do we know this? And if we know this, there's no way we don't do it too. It just started to like get in his crawl that he was like, if we know this, we're doing it.
Right.
And he was like obsessed with the fact that he wanted to figure out, because he felt like because he was finding it on all of these classified servers, it told him we must be doing it more so. And that's why I'm getting this assignment.
Wow.
Is to shine the spotlight on them because we're doing it worse. And he saw that was like his hypothesis, you know, when you're writing a term paper, like, I'm pretty sure this is the case. And that's what sent him digging.
Wow. It's amazing. So there you go. I'm just telling you, warning you guys, pay attention to the China propaganda all over your televisions. You know, it's much more nuanced than this, but it really just comes down to the power of the U.S. dollar, the America's place in the world, and how we're going to undermine China with this fear mongering and sanctions or war. I mean, or what we do in Taiwan. So just keep your eyes out for it.
And I was thinking today, like, what can I do as a responsible citizen? Because I've never been to China. I don't really know what, you know, is behind the curtain there, but I'm pretty sure these headlines are being manipulated for government power to hand somebody that's not me power. So the very least that I can do is not puppet things that I don't know for sure. So if you right. find yourself saying, well, China's the wrong guy, or even just like that CNN clip with Roger Waters, if you find yourself saying, hey, they're the human, ha, 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 they're the human rights abuse here.
Right.
You know, like, do you know that? If not, then shut up.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah. they've got the perfect, like, I don't know if it's even a trifecta. I don't know how many there are in it, but they've got the China's building up weapons and sending them to Russia. So China's got this massive army. And then they're talking about like their oppression of Taiwan and their economic domination of the U.S. Like, they're stealing your jobs, too. So now they've got a big army. They're taking your jobs. And with TikTok, they're like, and they're going after your children. Like, they're piling it on so that that everybody gets a button pushed.
We yeah. didn't even you know, get it's, to it's gas not like there's a single to the narrative. Petro yuan.
We didn't get to the Petroyuan. We didn't get to the China's Belt and Road Initiative, which is a major threat to, you know, distribution and trade through the Middle East and areas that the United States, was instead wasting money and doing stupid stuff instead of building up our own infrastructure. And China wasn't. So, I mean, again, this is the now it's like now we're sort of like a crying toddler that we didn't get our way.
I would love to see, you know, someone interrupt Karine Jean-Pierre and say, oh, you're worried about TikTok because of how hard it is on young people and their self-body image and that kind of thing. You'd be like, no,
worried about it because of China. Yeah, we're worried about it because of China.
Not that we subsidize junk food. We don't care about young people's bodies
or the drag shows that are all over TikTok.
No,
and, no, we're not concerned
not at
about
all.
That.
Not that. It's because it threatens us.
Yeah. Well, we've got more news to get to here on this. What is it? Thursday? Yes, Thursday.
Today's Thursday.
State Department funded censorship. We're going to talk about Ukraine's digital transformation. Did you know that they rolled out an entire digital transformation inside of Ukraine? And what does that mean for us? Because God knows that's coming to us next. Testing ground? You bet. We're going to get to that. But first, Joe in our chat, Joe H. I see you. He was bothered by something that we showed the other day, and I want to call it out because I love our viewers. Joe said, context is important, and that Zelensky clip that we showed the other day where he's talking about sons and daughters from America will have to fight and blood will be shed on the battlefield in Ukraine. The important point to point out is that he did say if Ukraine loses, that's what he was responding to. If Ukraine loses, then what this will mean is, like, so he's saying, in order for us to not lose, you need to come here. We need to have as much force and support and money so that we don't lose. But if we do lose, America's sons and daughters will have to come and fight Russia, is basically what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can slice it a number of ways because he was speaking off the cuff and he was like heated in response to this point. But he was saying, if Ukraine loses, America's sons and daughters will basically have to be here, shed blood in the same way that Ukrainians are having to shed blood.
Okay.
So, and he said context is important. And I just wanted to clarify that that's what he's saying. So,
okay, we agree on context.
Anyway.
All right. Shall we talk about the State Department?
Let's do it.
The State Department has been censoring media outlets. Is this a surprise to you? This is the American State Department. This is through something called the Global Disinformation Index. Now, if you're like me, every time you hear disinformation and misinformation, it gives you a spidey sense. It tingles. What is the, how would I say that? It sends your...
Well, your spidey sense goes off.
It activates my spidey sense. Okay. In fact, the State Department used this to squash what they called conspiracy theorists that said that COVID came from a lab leak. That's interesting, right? Because we're supposed to think that now. We weren't at one point, and the State Department was using this tool to deplatform and defund media outlets that gave this any ink. Now, I guess that's not such a conspiracy theory now that we have two U.S. government organizations saying they do think that COVID came from a lab. But the changing narrative is not really the point here, although it's always the point because we just stink and can't keep up. The point is that the State Department works with this GDI, is how I'm going to refer to it, is the Global Disinformation Index, to deplatform news outlets that it thinks are not towing the line.
Oh, great.
With being mouthpieces of the government. So here is the GDI. This is just their website. Tells you what they do. It's like, we're really out there to disrupt online disinformation. They are like little truth seekers. I think of them as like the peacekeepers in the Hunger Games, you know, like they're going to beat you up for doing something that's not good for President Snow. The GDI is a British nonprofit group that received at least $665,000 from the Global Center and the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, In fact, the Washington Examiner reports that the State Department has donated at least $330 million in taxpayer money to NED. The Examiner found that these organizations actually rank news outlets. So it's not like they're taking specific pieces of disinformation, although they do that. But one of their main projects is to rank who they think is spreading disinformation and then put them on blast and then encourage or discourage advertisers to work with them. Listen to how the Examiner explains this.
Well-funded disinformation tracking groups are part of a stealth operation blacklisting and trying to defund conservative media, likely costing news companies large sums in advertising dollars. A Washington Examiner investigation has found these companies compile a secret blacklist and feed them to ad companies, with the aim of defunding and shutting down disfavored speech. The Global Disinformation Indexes rates news outlets based on their alleged disinformation risk factor. Those they deem risky are placed on an exclusion list developed by GDI's advisory panel, which include Ben Nimmo, a global lead for threat intelligence at Facebook's parent company Meta, and journalist Ann Applebaum, who has said Hunter Biden's foreign business dealings are not, quote, interesting. The Washington Examiner is on GDI's exclusion list, but the Washington Examiner was never contacted by GDI or informed of how it failed to meet GDI's standards. GDI discloses in reports which outlets it identifies as the riskiest and worst offenders for peddling disinformation. The top 10 all skew to the right. Some on the list are Newsmax, The Federalist, The American Conservative, One America News, The Daily Wire, and Real Clear Politics. On the flip side, all the websites GDI ranks as the least riskiest lean left in their news coverage. These include NPR, The Associated Press, The New York Times, USA Today, and The Washington Post. GDI's disinformation tracking efforts have even resulted in opinion pieces being flagged. A Washington Examiner commentary article titled "The Less Gender-Bending Obsession is Tiresome and Absurd" was labeled as anti-LGBTQ+ disinformation. That same memo singled out Amazon for hosting ads in the Washington Examiner. Topics recently labeled disinformation relate to COVID-19, anti-vaccine content, mask protests, abortion, and alleged voter fraud during the 2020 presidential election. GDI is not alone among groups blacklisting certain websites while coordinating with ad companies. Another is DoubleVerify, a $4 billion publicly traded company that operates an inflammatory news index. The Washington Examiner has also been labeled as inflammatory by DoubleVerify. To read the full investigative piece, head to WashingtonExaminer.com. I'm Amy DeLora for Washington Examiner.
Wow.
Yeah, that's some shit.
Yeah, good for the Washington Examiner for that. That's unbelievable.
I mean, they literally went after Amazon for putting an ad on something that they didn't like. For wrongthink.
So this is, you know, your American tax dollars at work. Right. This is American tax dollars.
It's not enough to just say, like Justin Trudeau, like, I don't like you. You know, you're not a news outlet. But it's quite another thing to go after their revenue.
Right.
And so that, I mean, what that does is deplatform them so they have less money to broadcast these opinions to a certain contingency of the population that's willing to listen to them.
I mean, we saw this at Fox News, right? We saw this with like Tucker's show when he said things that were that people deemed inflammatory, and then they went after his
advertisers.
But that
was more overt. This is like, we're going to work under behind the scenes to pull the rug out from under you because you're not towing the line. Philip, go ahead.
Oh, well, I wonder then if they go back and if they readjust those ratings when it turns out that the thing that they said that was disinformation turned out to be true. Do they then go back and say, oh, actually, it looks like this is a trustworthy news site? And you know they don't, because that's not really what they want to do.
No,
that's not what they're trying to do. They're not trying to find the truth and get to the bottom of disinformation. They're trying to bury these media outlets because they don't like them.
Yes. And you can see that. With if we could go to screen three, I had screen two was just a list of who is on this blacklist, this risky list. But if you look at this list, the way that they don't quantify how the news outlets got on this naughty list. They only qualify. And that's an important distinction, because I was a social scientist. I have done content analysis. This is not how this is done. You don't just write an emotional qualification of how you feel about these outlets. You have to somehow quantify it if you're going to call them whatever inflammatory thing that they're calling him, like calling them here, like the reason that they're saying this, they're just very emotion based. It's not based on any social science at all.
I mean, Philip, video games are ranked more clearly than this, right? I mean, like, right? Yeah. I mean, Metacritic, you can get like, oh, it's got an 89 or whatever. And it's based on a whole bunch of factors, right? Here, it's just, it's some emotional based response.
Right. So it's problematic that they do it at all. But the way that they're doing it is obviously very biased, and not social science at all. And also just, I have a problem. I like reason.com. I read that every day. I don't find it to be risky in any way, but it is very provocative.
Well, what's risky?
Right down the center.
You know, if you're...
Okay, that's a valid question.
But what is risky? I mean, what is it? I mean, because if there's a piece of information that you see, you should be able to read that piece of information and synthesize it, right?
Yeah.
You should be able to seek out context, other sources. What is it? What's the risk in seeing a piece of information like reading Thomas, reading like Thomas Paine's Common Sense during the Revolutionary War, a pamphlet passed around to by revolutionaries? Like, oh, what is it risk? What is it risk that you can't think for yourself? And what's the risk?
I mean, I don't know. There's even one in there. For the Daily Wire, it says they use sensational images, like, you know, not just that they're asking questions we don't like, but the images they run next to them.
Like risk of what? Government overthrow? Risk of...
Well, the way that they're presenting it to advertisers is that these people may be guilty of misinformation. So then if you advertise with them, you've been advertising with media outlet that's not responsible journalism.
But misinformation is not a crime.
Yes. And who is the video of the YouTuber that you sent me today? He's got like a Scottish accent. And he did a great piece sort of rounding up most recent conspiracy theorists that all turned out to be true.
Oh, Joseph.
Yes.
Paul Joseph Watson. Am I saying it right? Yeah.
I believe he did a great video just today, I think, of all of the conspiracy theories that have turned out to be true in the last year. And he was like, I really hope all the conspiracy theorists just stop having to be right all the time.
Right.
And so.
Is he Scottish? I think he might be British.
I'm pretty sure he's Irish or Scottish. I don't know the accent.
He's absolutely great. Yeah.
I don't know. So anyhow, yes, then this should be reframed, especially now, that they've done a terrible job of promoting misinformation themselves. I just want to show you quickly who was on the nice list because, we're showing you now that news outlets have an incentive to follow government narrative or else go bankrupt. And so here are the posts that are on the top 10, like low risk, meaning they're on the good list.
Huffington Post is on the good list?
Yeah. The Wall Street Journal, the Huff Post, Associated Press. Now, this is reason.com today saying, sure, they do some admirable journalism, but they are not immune to disinformation at all, such as, of course, Hunter Biden laptop story and how it was covered by those media outlets. Now, on to how the GDI would score itself, given the narrative this week about the COVID lab leak, because every media news outlet is repeating that. But the GDI published a 2020 report, and they were all in on the COVID came from a lab being disinformation. Here's the report. It's called Coronavirus, the Makings of a Disinformation Pandemic. Now, this was before the Western world into lockdown, so they were writing this as like, maybe it's only a misinformation pandemic. Maybe they didn't know at the time it would become a real pandemic. But here is what they had to say about the fact that adversarial narratives win as a weapon of disinformation when they're laundered and repeated by trusted sources, even when the sources do not explicitly endorse them. And then they mention Senator Tom Cotton, who said that the coronavirus may have originated as a bioweapon in a Chinese super lab. By broadcasting the senator's words to a national audience, the debunked conspiracy theory is given authority, validation, and amplification. So they need to put themselves on the blacklist, given that they labeled something disinformation that they didn't even know. Nobody knew at this point where in February of 2020, nobody knew if it was a lab leak or not. Or did they know that it was a deliberate lab leak?
Right. And, you know, we have the video of Fauci before that, you know, many, many months before that, saying that President Trump during his term will have a pandemic.
Right.
So, he knows that because he said it unequivocally that he will have a pandemic on his hands. And he was funding gain of function research in Wuhan lab. And then suddenly, so maybe he knew something there.
Well, they would recognize that. So like these VSL4 labs where they're working on this kind of crazy, like these viruses that are extremely dangerous. Nobody's in there just working rogue. Everybody knows what's going on. They know what they're working on, and they would recognize the handiwork. Like, it's not like they don't know what that thing was doing. You know what I mean? Like, so it can't get out in the wild and them go, oh, I don't know what that is. It'd be like Dr. Frankenstein not recognizing, I don't know what that monster came from. Mm. Like, I don't recognize it. That's not the one I made.
Yeah.
You know, they knew.
And yeah. I wonder how much of, I don't know if you're able to go back to this or not, Philip, which is the screen that Natalie had up there of the whitelisted companies or not, if you have it handy or not.
The good guys, the nice list.
The good guys, because, you know, it's always interesting. I always want to follow the funding of these people, right? So USA Today, New York Times, NPR, CNN, right? Wall Street Journal, HuffPost. And then you look and you realize the documents that show that Bill Gates has given $319 million to these media outlets, you know, including NPR, CNN. Almost everyone on that list has huge donations coming in from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and these donors, you know.
Yeah. So this is a very problematic story. It's problematic because the GDI is full of crap. And they should not be the ones to rank disinformation, given that their track record on disinformation isn't great. But also the government shouldn't be in the business of ranking news outlets and then deplatforming them and manipulating their business model at all. This should be obvious to anyone who is in this business. And I think here's a quote that sums this up nicely from the Examiner's report. This is from Jeremy Clark, ex-acting head of the Justice Department's Civil Division, told the Washington Examiner, any outfit like that engaged in censorship shouldn't have any contact with the government because they're tainted by association with a group that is doing something fundamentally against American values. The government or any private entity shouldn't be involved with this entity that's engaged in conduct that is either legally questionable or at least morally questionable. I would say that's morally deplorable, but okay, we'll use questionable. We'll say it a little nicer.
Yeah.
You know, something from the top that I missed and I just caught. And so it's like, if anybody else happened to miss it too, this is a government organization doing this. Like for some reason, I was thinking it was like a think tank, but this is an actual like governmental agent or like a.
They are a British nonprofit.
Funded by the U.S.
By the U.S. State Department.
So the U.S. State Department funding this operation. So
to
they
the
can,
tune of millions.
So they can like wipe their hands of it, basically. But they know what's going on. I mean, you know.
So how can they, I mean, maybe I don't understand the law very well, but how can then the U.S. government go after people's, like, the advertising dollars and stuff? Like, how are they getting involved in that? That is such a bizarre, like, chain of events, you know, like that the government is actually trying to. I mean, I know we know the government's trying to deplatform people, but I don't know. This is just blowing my mind. Sorry.
Yeah. No, this is a great way for them to do it, right? It's underhanded.
Yeah, and it's a great way to use these words, misinformation and disinformation, for nefarious purposes to stop any voices that want to challenge them.
So here's what you do. You set up a fake rating system, right, where that you fund it. So you set up like a fake rating system, this GDI, this idea of like rating different news organizations. You put the ones you don't like on the bottom and then you go after them and tell them, look, the news site that you're advertising on ranked really low on this news website. You probably don't want to advertise on them anymore. And then the advertising dries up, the publication dies, and then you have a victory at the State Department.
Yeah. Choked them out basically, or smoked. Smoked them out is the expression.
Smoked them out is like if someone's hiding in a hole and you want to find them like a gopher.
Okay, that's not what I meant. These lists, they went after advertisers such as Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook in order to actively choke the revenue.
Yeah, choke them out. Choke them off is what you want to say. Choke them off.
Okay.
Choke them off.
Squeeze them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Squeeze the last bit of toothpaste out of the tube.
To put the pressure on them.
Stop.
To put them in a headlock.
She's a brilliant woman, but she is awful with idioms.
I can't do idioms. I can just keep thinking of.
She'll be like, yeah, well, imagine if your shoe was on the wrong hand. Like, you know, I want to walk a million miles in that girl's.
High heels,
you know. Anyway, let us know your favorite idioms in our chat. We'd love to hear from you.
Or nice if you have another way of saying that they.
Yeah.
They give them the slip.
All right. Keep going with this.
I don't think that one works.
You can keep doing this in our next segment. All right, we've got more news to get to on this busy Thursday night. We're going to look at Ukraine's digital transformation, which did you know that they were doing this? And it's coming for you next, by the way, because this, we now know George Soros funded training ground for everything in Ukraine is being tested there. Even Ukraine admitted that, hey, we get to test out all of these new NATO weapons in Ukraine. So it's basically just a testing ground for everything that's coming. It's a great opportunity. So we'll tell you about that. We're also going to tell you about the plans for the next lockdown, or maybe we can learn from the leaked messages about what lockdowns were supposed to look like. We're going to show you that in just a moment. But first, we should remind you that we have a community. We have a great community here of VIP members who, if you want to support independent journalism, you can do that for the price of a cup of coffee once a month. You can support independent journalism by going to redacted.inc. You get access to early videos that we're producing and exclusive content that you won't get anywhere else. And we do that for our Redacted Rebel VIP group. And it's a way to support independent journalism. You know, this show is totally free, so you can enjoy this show free. If you'd like to support it a little bit more, you can do that. Redacted.inc is the place to go. You get access to our locals community, which is our VIP community, redacted.inc. And we had a record number of signups in February for our community. So come on over. It's nice and warm over there. Redacted.inc. Well, as our viewers know, we've been covering extensively here on the show the war in Ukraine, looking at, of course, what's been unfolding on the battlefield and the geopolitics associated with it. But one of the big stories that hasn't gone reported at all is the digital transformation of Ukraine. What is going on here? In fact, many people don't know that the Zelensky government has created a laboratory, turned Ukraine into what they call a digital transformation. In fact, Zelensky himself has even set up an entire ministry dedicated to advancing this digital transformation. What is this all about? Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen just filed this investigation. Watch.
On January 19th, USAID Director Samantha Power appeared at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, to promote a digital identification smartphone app called DIA.
And one of the most incredible things that Ukraine has developed over the last few years is an app called DIA that now delivers 120 services to the people of Ukraine.
Standing next to Power was Mykhailo Fedorov, Ukraine's Minister of Digital Transformation and Vice Prime Minister. Fedorov is a graduate of NATO's educational program in Ukraine and the World Economic Forum's Young Leader Program. He's the key figure implementing what is known as Ukraine's Digital Transformation, a program to transform the country into an electronic state controlled by Silicon Valley big tech corporations and U.S. military intelligence.
Thank you to the USAID team because we got support for DIA and we are ready to share our expertise with other countries because digitalization is foundation of transparency and of democracy.
The DIA app is a central plank in this process. It digitizes and centralizes documents, records, and government and business transactions all into a digital identity. This offers an unprecedented system of surveillance and control. According to the World Economic Forum, digital identity determines what products, services, and information we can access, or conversely, what is closed off to us. The DIA project is funded primarily by USAID as part of its larger project to implement digital ID systems throughout the world. It was first introduced by Volodymyr Zelensky in May 2019, just 4 days into his presidency.
Правительство в смартфоне.
Zelensky and Fedorov officially launched DIA in
February 2020.
Zelensky plans to hold elections through this app.
У тому числі голосувати, і це наша мрія, і ми це зробимо, голосувати на президентських, парламентських чи місцевих виборах. Це виклик амбітний, але досяжний.
This is endorsed by the Atlantic Council as how Ukraine can greatly reduce the scope for election fraud. However, the American Association for the Advancement of Science issued an open letter in April 2020 warning of possible vote manipulation and numerous security vulnerabilities. This is even more fraught given that Zelensky has since banned all opposition parties. DIA privatizes government services, implemented through a series of memorandums of understanding with Western corporations. E-banking is predicated on an agreement with Visa. An electronic census is run by Apple. Google personnel manage DIA. Fedorov commented, "Google services have become our infrastructure." The center of what Zelensky calls the digital state is not a physical place. It is a financial creation called DIA City.
Це цифрова столиця електронної держави. DIA City – один з найкращих податкових та правових режимів на планеті. На планеті, де говорять мовою венчурного інвестування.
Zelensky also established an e-residency program that does not require physical presence inside Ukrainian borders and is off limits to stateless persons and Russians.
Everyone is at the center of such a state, no matter who or where they are. Everyone who wants to change and be an agent of change. It is a new generation of state, open to the whole world.
DIA and the digital transformation have been promoted through culture, too.
Nothing's gonna be alright.
Through global crises, the digital transformation has advanced. Just weeks after DIA's launch, coronavirus panic swept the world. Ukraine implemented severe lockdowns, banned public gatherings, levied $1,000 fines, and prosecuted lockdown violators as criminals. Some cities dug mass graves to scare the public into compliance. Amid this climate of terror, DIA issued its first push notifications, informing users about the draconian new restrictions. Vaccine passports were introduced. Those who complied with vaccine mandates were eligible for a one-time payment of 1,000 hryvnia, equivalent to $38.
Якщо ви повнолітній громадянин або громадянка України, маєте зелений ковід-сертифікат у дії, оформіть картку «Є-підтримка» в банку-партнері та придбайте квитки на культурні заходи, потяги і літаки, абонементи в спортзали і фітнес-центри та книжки.
At the 2021 World Economic Forum, Mikhailo Fedorov openly admitted that the COVID-19 crisis was used to speed up the digital transformation.
The pandemic has accelerated our progress. First of all, people are really now demanding digital online services. People have no choice but to trust technology.
By early February 2022, DIA had encroached upon all aspects of Ukrainian life.
Державні смартфони вже стали невід'ємною частиною модерності українців. Весь світ дивиться на Україну. Як на трансцентру цивілізації?
Точно не палеоліт, не середньовіччя і навіть не 2018 рік. Це абсолютно нова реальність, яка наступила всього за 2 роки.
As the US and NATO pushed Ukraine into war with Russia, the digital transformation took a new dimension. A government advisor told Wired magazine, "We have restructured the Ministry of Digital Transformation into a clear military organization." The government rolled out several new wartime features for DIA, among them a feature for Ukrainians to report Russian troop movements and anonymously accuse others of being collaborators.
Since the first days of invasion, we've seen how Ukrainians with their bare hands try to stop Russian tanks. How brave and fearless our people are. This gave us the idea that taking a photo of Russian troops and hardware shouldn't be a big deal for them at all. Instead, our army will receive truthful and updated information on the enemy's positions. That's how we came up with our next wartime service.
The team at Ministry of Digital Transformation created a chatbot, Yevrog, e-enemy, in the Telegram messenger. With this chatbot, Ukrainians can report the movement of occupants and collaborators and capture the location of enemy equipment with just a few clicks. The main difference from all other existing bots is authorization through DIA app. Chatbot has become a digital weapon of every Ukrainian in occupied territories.
The government payment system expanded, making digitization permanent.
This service is expanding. When the war began, it started being available to Ukrainians who had to move away from hostile territories. In the future, all social assistance Ukrainians will receive through eAid.
The wartime transformation also included a single 24/7 government-approved news outlet, giving DIA users a steady feed of propaganda. Entertainment features were added too.
These new features in app continue to develop into other cool services for citizens, such as an opportunity to watch the national Eurovision contest and then choose the winner. Everything available in DIA.
For Samantha Power, this was a great achievement.
DIA is an app that was originally designed to simplify bureaucracy, and it has now been repurposed by Ukrainians for wartime. Its wild success in such a short period of time in getting used by citizens is an accomplishment.
As Russian attacks decimated the cellular network, USAID purchased and delivered to Ukraine tens of thousands of Elon Musk's Starlink satellite broadband terminals, allowing DIA to continue to operate.
You can't underestimate satellite communications in this war. This is our new critical infrastructure in liberated territories and frontline areas to restore communications between people.
Yet the Starlink terminals have failed from energy shortages. This is one of many weaknesses of the DIA platform. In January 2022, DIA was breached and millions of Ukrainians' personal data was compromised. The Ministry of Digital Transformation created a troll farm to defend itself on social media. The more destruction in Ukraine, the more the digital transformation advanced. In October 2020, Ukraine signed an agreement with Microsoft to move DIA to its cloud server. Mikhailo Fedorov stressed that the data center must be inside Ukrainian borders. This process accelerated ahead of the Russian military operation, as Ukraine uploaded critical government data to cloud centers based in Ukraine, facilitated by Silicon Valley giants Amazon, Oracle, and others. A week before the Russian military operation, Ukraine's parliament passed legislation to allow government and private sector data to be moved to cloud storage abroad. The day the operation began, Amazon met with Ukrainian government officials. They began transferring critical government data to Amazon's military-grade hard drives called Snowballs. These hard drives were then transferred from Ukraine to Poland and onto secret locations where they were uploaded to cloud centers controlled by Amazon. Liam Maxwell, head of government transformation at Amazon Web Services, called the transfer "government in a box," literally.
This is probably one of the smartest and most strategic decisions ever made. At this point of my presentation, I want to express my gratitude to global big tech companies such as Amazon Web Services, Oracle, Google, Microsoft, and my sincere respect to the Polish government on this matter as well. Support we've received and keep receiving with storage and all kinds of services free of charge, Save Digital Ukraine.
In the aftermath, Fedorov awarded Amazon with Ukraine's Peace Prize.
Thank you for the support.
Ex-Google CEO Eric Schmidt commented on the data transfer, saying the war gave everybody a political excuse to do the right thing, suggesting the crisis was used as a pretext for a voluntary transfer of sovereignty. This process has continued as Ukraine has sent tens of millions of gigabytes of data from at least several dozen government ministries, universities, and financial institutions. As the war grinds on, Fedorov jet-sets around the United States and Europe, promoting the takeover of his country by Western corporations.
Today,
I want to show you how technology lets you protect the entire democratic world and how each of you can test your product in Ukraine, capitalize on your company, and join our victory.
Samantha Power and USAID are seeking to implement DIA-style digital IDs in other countries.
We are now looking at taking this DIA app and seeing whether other countries where leaders were elected on anti-corruption platforms in places like Zambia, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, whether this app, you know, can actually be exported and become a tool.
Estonia, which has long been experimenting with digital government, is implementing its own version of DIA, as is Poland. As for the United States, USAID Deputy Isabel Coleman wrote on Twitter that she is envious of the app, saying, "Who doesn't long to be able to one-click a new driver's license," suggesting digital ID will be rolled out domestically. Through digital transformation, national sovereignty is becoming a relic of the past, replaced by avatar states that are managed by a supranational technocratic elite and military intelligence. Ukraine is the test case.
And joining us now is Dan Cohen, redacted correspondent, with the details on this report. Unbelievable. So, Dan, there's a lot of details in this report. What stood out to you as you started your investigation?
Well, what I really wanted to show is how Ukraine, through its loss of sovereignty dating back to the coup in 2014 that the U.S., of course, orchestrated, has been used as a laboratory to advance this so-called digital transformation, which, as we saw, is really a process of voluntarily handing over sovereignty, not only state sovereignty, but also privacy and rights to the U.S. government, the behemoths of Silicon Valley, like Google, Microsoft, Amazon. That, I mean, these Silicon Valley behemoths are essentially more powerful than nation states and don't answer to anyone. Ukraine is one of many countries that are on similar paths, but first COVID and then war, which are manufactured crises, have been exploited to advance this process. So Ukraine is the furthest along. So that's kind of one of the important takeaway. Another thing we have to ask is, how much is this digitalization a driver for what seems like permanent U.S. support for war in Ukraine? Because Ukraine is being used as a laboratory where this technology is being exported to countries like Estonia, to Poland, sort of the post-Soviet states of Eastern Europe that have the weakest sovereignty and ability to regulate and keep out foreign power. How much of this process is the driver for ongoing war in Ukraine? Obviously, regime change in Russia and the dismemberment of Russia is a top priority. But what I wonder is, like, you know, what is 1A and what is 1B? Are they just really inseparable?
It is interesting, too, because we've seen societies transformed with digital, well, with passports, right? We saw this, of course, in Crimea and the stamping of passports. Basically, oh, you're no longer Russian. You're now Ukrainian. Here you go, stamp. And we can see this, and the move towards this all digital sort of passport, vaccine passport strategy where everything is digitized. You really can, you know, exert power and influence by mobilizing this in a digital way.
Exactly. And it's all done through fear propaganda. I mean, I showed how Ukraine actually dug mass graves in order to scare their population into compliance with the COVID regime, into observing lockdowns, which of course were then used to roll out the COVID injections. And then you had to get a COVID passport. You had to get a vaccine passport if you want to participate in society, similarly how you had to do that in the United States, but in Ukraine to an even more extreme degree, and you had to have it for international travel. So much of this is based on people being scared, so they shut down their critical thinking skills, and they go along with the program. And also, it's marketed as convenience. Like, this, right, is all this digitalization.
It'll make your life,
making everything,
it'll make your life so much better, right? You don't have to worry. Just everything is digital. You don't need paper money anymore because it'll give you COVID if you touch it. So just everything is digital. We'll be able to track everything. You won't have to even worry about it because we've got all your health records and everything is digital. So it is it's all about convenience. That's how they market it.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's, and I mean, I think of like, you know, to a cow going into the slaughterhouse, the conveyor belt looks pretty convenient, I guess. Wow, I don't even have to walk, but we know how that ends. So right. Maybe it's kind of an extreme comparison, but I think it holds up that we really need to be skeptical and push back against this whole digitalization program that's going on in not only in Ukraine, but in the United States, in Europe. They're trying to push it in Africa, all over the world, and understand that this is not for our benefit, that this is for the benefit of the technocratic elite, Silicon Valley, the billionaire oligarchy, the tiny minority of billionaires that really are running the world.
Right. It's more profits for them. It's much harder to make a transaction in cash if you have to go and pay for something with cash. The barrier to entry, you know, is much more difficult. It's so much easier for you to blink your eyes and a package shows up at your door and you never even see the money because it's all digital. It's all tied and very, very convenient for them. Dan Cohen, great to see you. Thanks for this great report.
Thank you, Clayton.
So fascinating, isn't it? I mean, it's just the idea that we're going to control everything. It really is a testing ground. So we see the opportunity. We're going to use Ukraine as a testing ground for all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Under the auspices that it's more convenient and better for you, but we're just going to use it. So the United States government, Silicon Valley, uses this as a way to roll this out. And it's great.
Yeah.
It's
going
to be great. Everyone in the chat was saying,
I want that digitized green head. Yeah. I want that digitized green head running my country. That's who I'm voting for this.
Sure. Yeah.
this next election.
Everyone in our chat was like, hell no. Oh no. Yeah, we get a tinfoil hat, but it's true. It's here. It's already here.
And also it's a great historical context of how this has been in the works far longer than just the Russian occupation.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. It started right after 2014. So you can see, and then it was really mobilized and moved more quickly during the pandemic. Well, we've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We are going to look at the leaked lockdown messages from the UK government. But first, we should tell you about our newsletter. We do have a daily newsletter. Redacted.inc is the place to go. Please sign up for it. Again, it's totally free. And you just put in your email address. You'll receive the newsletter first thing in the morning. It's not .com. It's redacted.inc. And you have to verify the email, though. People always say, oh, I didn't get it. Because I don't know, I was like, oh, I forgot to verify the email. So you'll receive a welcome email. Just go to your welcome email. It might be in your spam folder. It might be in your, I don't know, some other folder. And then just click verify and then drag it to your inbox. So tomorrow morning, we publish the newsletter Monday through Friday. So you should receive the newsletter tomorrow morning about 6:30, 7 a.m. Eastern time, depending on where you are in the world. And we hope to make it really fun for you to enjoy over your cup of coffee and get you set up for the day. So it's redacted.inc is the place to go.
All right. Well, politicians in Britain are admitting that they once considered killing all of your pets to stop the COVID pandemic. Here is former Health Minister James Bethel. He told a news channel this, and he says it like, you should be grateful for it. Like, hey, we may have locked you down, took away your money and your liberties, and not let you have parties while we had parties, but at least we didn't kill your pets. So you better be grateful about that. Listen to him say it for himself.
There was a moment when we were very unclear about whether domestic pets or not could transmit the disease. In fact, there was an idea at one moment that we may have to ask the public to exterminate all the cats in Britain. Can you imagine what would have happened if we had wanted to do that? And yet there was, for a moment, a little bit of evidence about that. So that had to be investigated and closed down.
Was there evidence about that?
For a moment, there was a little bit of evidence.
It was like one person thought that their cat may have had COVID. And then maybe that means that all the cats should be killed. So, you know, I mean, he's saying that like, well, so what they're doing is saying, look, we didn't understand COVID for a long time for reasons. Right. And so we had to fly off the cuff. And so, you know, yeah, we did some stupid things, but at least we didn't kill your pets. So that is what I take away from that intonation. Maybe that's not the right intentional read. You tell me what you think. This is in full damage control after over 100,000 WhatsApp messages from former Health Secretary Matt Hancock were leaked to the Daily Telegraph by journalist Isabel Oakeshott. Leak may be the wrong word because she's been working with the Daily Telegraph on what they call these, what do they call them? The lockdown files. And she's one of the journalists on that team. And she had been given these WhatsApp messages by the former health secretary, Matt Hancock, and she decided to publish them and to publish her take on them. So she didn't take them. She didn't hack them. He willingly gave it over to her because he was writing a book about the pandemic. And then she decided the public needs to see this. She admits that she broke a non-disclosure agreement to release this. And here's what she said to the BBC's Radio 4 program. She says, "I'm a working journalist. They did not pay me for this message, for these messages. I've been helping the Daily Telegraph with the investigation, and you'll see that I've been writing stories for the Daily Telegraph. Anyone who thinks I did this for money must be utterly insane. This is about millions of people, every one of us in this country, that were adversely affected by the catastrophic decisions to lock down repeatedly, often on the flimsiest of evidence, for political reasons. In fact, the messages do show that this health minister was communicating in teams of people about COVID policies, and it was all politics." It was all posturing and politics. I'll give you some highlights from the Daily Mail. They didn't publish all 100,000 messages, so I haven't seen all of those. We get a few, and then we get their summary. The byline is, here you see, the lockdown files team. So it feels very much like they are taking a page out of the Twitter files, and they're digging. They're doing their own investigative journalist. But given Hancock and the government's reaction to these messages, we have reason to believe that they are very authentic because they are freaking out, basically. Now, they accuse Hancock of pushing back against Education Secretary Sir Gavin Williamson when he wanted to reopen schools in January of 2021. And he continues to warn that the opening will be a policy car crash. And he crosses Sir Gavin when, at the time, Prime Minister Boris Johnson decides to side with him. And then Hancock sort of goes around him and thwarts him and says, how can we make it so schools don't open? So the education secretary wants to open schools, thinks he can do it safely. And the health minister is just working behind his back saying, we can't do this. And then what happened? Well, schools actually open for one day. Politicians freaked out and they closed schools until March 8th. And why do these messages show? Was it because children were falling like flies? No.
No.
Were they being shown to be bringing home more COVID? No. This was just what politicians wanted to do.
Right.
Here is from the Daily Mail. The lockdown files show his push to shut schools was just one of a number of repeated instances where the interests of children were apparently disregarded in favor of restrictions. Many of the measures went against the counsel of scientific advisors who were saying we can open schools safely. The decisions made around children's education were amongst the most controversial of the pandemic. Studies have shown that keeping children away from the classroom led to a rise in mental health problems and a decline in development. Some children lost more than 100 days of schooling because of closures alone. Now, recall that when there were parents pushing back against these regulations and trying to reopen schools, those parents were deplatformed, namely by PayPal. And other blogging platforms. Hancock also pushed to send children home if they tested positive from a lateral flow test, which has a high incidence of false positives. So there were other politicians around them saying, well, we shouldn't send kids home just on a lateral flow test. If they test positive on that test, let's follow up with a PCR test so that we know if they have it, so that we don't just send home kids willy-nilly. And he said, no, we're not going to do that because it would be too much of a hassle, meaning false positive kids may be being sent home, but whatever. That's okay. It's no big deal. Now, as someone who had to quarantine my kids, even when they were just exposed, for instance, you know, if someone on the bus, on our bus route got COVID, all the kids on that bus had to quarantine, even if they didn't test positive. Or if one of my children had a fever and still didn't have COVID, right. I had to keep all of them home for a week. I'm going to say, I'll tell you what a hassle it is. He's saying, oh, it'd be too much of a hassle to test for false positives. No, having your kids home when they should be in school and then you having to do virtual school, that is a hassle. Hassle is a nice word for that. And while he was so worried about kids in school, even though the data at the time did not show COVID as a risk to children, he did not seem worried about elderly people, even though the data at the time did show COVID as a risk to them. He was advised to give COVID tests to people entering nursing homes, and he said he decided not to because he said it muddies the water. He was more interested in hitting the target of 100,000 tests per day. So instead, he required COVID tests for those going from hospital to nursing homes, but not new entrants into nursing homes, where we know that COVID was more dangerous and could spread more like a wildfire. And he also fights to keep mask mandates in place in these messages in order to appease Scotland's Prime Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, who was COVIDism. She was poster child COVIDism, right? It was the three like English speaking countries were Nicola Sturgeon, Jacinda Ardern, and Justin Trudeau. Like that was the trio, the fab three on COVIDism, who were showing the world what it means to be an authoritarian and getting media praise for it. I'm going to again use the word that the chat room doesn't like. They were media darlings. When I say that, that doesn't mean we love them. That means the media loves them and is exceedingly kind to them. But Boris Johnson didn't want to, do you say a row? A row.
A row is, yeah, a fight in English parlance.
Yeah.
Right, in Britain.
Right? I've always said it a row, but I think they didn't want a row with...
A row.
I can't say.
Yeah, we have a lot of people watching from England tonight. Let us know in the chat. Is it? It's row, right?
But it's spelt like row. Your
R-O-W,
boat.
Right?
So those two, and she's not the prime minister. She's the first minister. And they're called
Robert Griffin says, that's peak Karen, Karen. Peak, like peak Karen. That's
yes.
The, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they didn't want a row with Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon because she was so big on COVIDism. So they said, we'll just keep the mask mandates in place. Yeah. You know what? Let's just keep it. Now, that's not science. I mean, it may be social science that I don't want to fight with other global leaders. So we'll keep mask mandates in place. But no, that's pure politics. And as the public goes absolutely nuts, because, you know, we're not over it. It's not so long in our distant past that we don't remember what it felt like to be at the mercy of global leaders and go into our house and come out of our house cautiously, to feel like other people's bodies were a time ticking time bomb, to see like old people walking down the street and not help them because you thought you could kill them by approaching them, like just carrying groceries for a little old lady because you might be carrying it.
Right.
Right. We lived through something based on rules that were flimsy, as this journalist calls them. And, you know, as the public is just going absolutely nuts about this, we have this politician saying, at least we didn't kill your cats.
Yeah. At least, you know, we were talking about it and we got very close to doing it where we would have killed all your cats. China did that. They told, you know, hey, grab all of the, this one apartment complex had it, get all of the pets in that whole apartment complex, put them in a bag, they're dead, and they're going to dump them on the street. We covered that story here on the show. We even showed you the awful bags. It was horrible. So
yeah.
It's not uncommon. I mean, it's out of the realm of possibility. That happened.
So here is debates in Parliament this week around these WhatsApp message leaks. Here are politicians saying, you know what? We just didn't know back then. We were just doing our best. So we had to do something. I mean, did they? But we just didn't know. So we can't rewrite history. Watch.
It seems to me that the opposition want to rewrite history.
Yeah.
The fact is, at the time, people didn't know what was right or what was wrong. The Secretary of State listened to a whole lot of advice and then had to make a decision. Even one of the WhatsApp messages I've seen says, tell me if I'm wrong. So it seems to me what should happen is the COVID inquiry should deal with all these matters properly. The one question I would have for the Minister is it possible to get the COVID inquiry to report earlier?
The leaked WhatsApp messages from the then Health Secretary, the Right Honourable Member for West Suffolk, showed that despite a shortage in COVID tests in September 2020, one of the Minister's advisers sent a test to the Right Honourable Member for North East Somerset's home by courier. This is yet more evidence that it's one rule for Conservative ministers and another for everyone else. So can the minister please inform the House how many other government ministers, Conservative MPs and their families received priority tests during the pandemic when there was a shortage of tests?
Well, actually, I'll say to her, much though it's a difficult thing for me as a minister to see WhatsApp messages from me, in fact, in the pages of the newspaper, if she has read those, she will see that I was seeking a test for a member of my family and using exactly the same app as everybody else to try and get access to a test that was needed.
Okay. So they're fighting over this, saying, hey, you know, you couriered the test, people couldn't get tests, whatever. But this, you know, hey, we didn't know at the time. We were acting on, we just didn't know. Well, then should you have been setting policies that affected people's lives if you didn't know? So that's a valid question.
Right.
But they did know. There were studies on masks. The one we reported on just this week about masks were from 2016
right.
and on, based on, you know, contagious flus, and it wasn't COVID, but we knew about the efficacy of masks. We knew children weren't at risk for severe COVID. We knew a lot of things. They knew elderly people were. So none of these policies were around what we actually knew. And I really reject this, like, hey, give us the benefit of the doubt, we were doing our best, because they weren't.
No, they actively knew this. And as Andrew Abridgen, of course, member of parliament, who's, I get forced out now on the Conservative Party, but he stood up. I mean, there was plenty of things that they knew that they were hiding, right? From on a whole range of issues, not just lockdowns, but to vaccines, et cetera, that the government knew and was well aware of inside the EU
yes.
and in the UK.
Yeah. But this, you know, at least we didn't kill your pets bit is a little extra scary, because it does a little bit come off like a veiled threat, like
yeah.
STFU, because next time we could.
Well, yeah, we can. We have ultimate power. We can take your land. We can take your pets. We can take your house. We can tell you that you can't leave. You can't drive. We can take your cash away from you, force mm-hmm. you to have digital currency. We can do all of that. As someone in the chat just said, you know, this coming, the World Health Organization's plans, all of those things are coming. And you're absolutely right about that in the chat. I didn't see whose name it was, but this is part of it. It's the control.
Perhaps. So hide your kitten if you've got one.
Yeah,
your
that's
pandemic
a row.
Pandemic kitten.
And our British audience is saying that I was right. It's row.
That's what I said.
It's row. Yeah, you said
yeah.
it too. Yeah, yeah.
But it still feels funny.
When you read it, you're like, a row? What's a row?
So. I had only just heard it out loud by my friend who's British recently. And I was like, that's how you say that word? Because there's lots of words I've yeah. only ever seen in print, which means I need to make more friends.
Need to get out more and talk to humans instead of print.
Fewer books, more people.
I do the same thing. I was like in a conversation with somebody and I said something and went, Aury, and he goes, you read a lot, don't you? And I was like, yeah, why? He's like, because it's awry. And I was like, oh okay.
What was the word you said? Aury?
I said Aury, but I've only ever read it. I don't think I've ever made that connection. It was
That's
just kind of
cute.
Funny.
So in context, you said, oh, that went Aury.
Yeah, I said Aury. Something like, and he just looked at me, he's like, you read a lot, don't you? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah.
So yeah. And hey, thanks to all of our new subscribers tonight. I saw a lot of new subscribers. If you do subscribe here, your name will pop up on the big board. So thank you guys so much. Earlier in the beginning of the show, if you were just joining us, I said, we notice in the analytics that, about 40% of you watch the show, but aren't subscribed. So that means 60% of you are subscribed. You get alerts and all of that. So 40% of you are not subscribed, but you do watch. So just go ahead and hit that subscribe button and you can set the little notification bug. That's the whole reason you subscribe, because subscription feeds on YouTube and don't even work anymore. I mean, they're stupid. So really the reason you subscribe is so you can get that notification, so that when we go live Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, that notification will come out. Plus, hopefully we'll show up in your suggested videos feed as well. So you can do that. And some people say, I can never find the show the next day because YouTube loves to suppress the show. Then you can go to the subscriptions feed and you can click on the subscription. You can see last night's live show right there. So that makes it easier for you. And the same thing with Rumble as well. You can subscribe over there. And that way it'll be right at the top on Rumble as well. So thank you everyone for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. We'll have content throughout the weekend as well. And we'll be back here live on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our great community. And have a great weekend, a great Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yes.
Yes.
Those are the days.
Bye, everyone. Much love to you. Good night.